Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from New York State United Teachers, working to support students, educators, and public schools as the center of their communities through the Public Schools Unite Us initiative, and United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. U.S. Customs and Border Protection announced this week that 38 ports of entry along the border with Canada will adjust their hours in January. Officials in New York State are not pleased about the reductions at a time when illegal crossings are increasing. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley reports.
Working in conjunction with its Canadian counterpart, U.S. Customs and Border Protection, or CBP, will reduce the operating hours of the Chateauguay, Trout River, Rouses Point, and Overton Corners crossings in New York effective January 6th. Border agents will be reassigned to busier ports of entry. The agency says affected travelers will be able to access crossings, quote, within a reasonable driving distance, unquote. Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Services Commissioner Jackie Bray says New York State got word a couple days before the official announcement and strenuously objected to the cuts.
We have been asking for more Border Patrol agents. We need more Border Patrol resources along our northern border. Last year, Governor Hochul directed an additional $5 million to support increased security. More state police troopers up there, more state police investigators, more license plate readers, more drone activity, more handheld X-ray machines, because we have seen an increase in illegal crossings along the northern border. And this decision by Border Patrol to reduce the number of folks that they have up there, reduce the number of hours, you know, it strikes us as really counter to what we need to see from our federal partners.
State Assemblyman D. Billy Jones, a Democrat from the 115th District, which abuts the Canadian border, says he is dismayed by the decision.
These closures will affect commercial traffic coming through. Any kind of disruption with those crossings will have a negative effect on residents on both sides of the border. Not to mention, we saw the negative effects that this had during the COVID years. We had a border closure for almost 2 years, and now we're piling on top of that reduced hours at some facilities that are making major upgrades as well.
Governor Kathy Hochul, a Democrat, issued a statement outlining her strong opposition to CBP's decision to reduce operating hours at the four New York border crossings. Commissioner Bray says the Swanton sector, which extends across Vermont and New York, has seen about 19,000 irregular crossings this year.
And that is much, much higher than what we see in a regular year. It's been increasing for several years. You know, I think that we have seen really strong, good action at our southern border over the last year to reduce the amount of unauthorized migration across our southern border. We haven't seen anywhere near the same level of resources to address challenges at the northern border, and Governor Hochul's been really clear that that needs to change.
New York State Senator Dan Steck, a Republican from the 45th District, issued a statement late Thursday saying he is outraged by the CBP decision, adding, quote, "You can't have a part-time border," unquote. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
Congestion pricing is back from the dead, meaning drivers will ring in the new year by paying tolls whenever they enter Lower Manhattan. The Metropolitan Transportation Authority approved a new version of its original congestion pricing plan Monday. As the Legislative Gazette's Jesse King reports, the toll still faces a lot of opposition.
All in favor of the motion, please. The motion carries. We've adopted the resolution.
The MTA board approved the new plan 12-1 in a meeting heavily attended by environmental groups and riders' advocates. It charges drivers $9, not the originally planned $15, to enter Manhattan south of 60th Street, with lower fees at night and exemptions for some vehicles. It's meant to bring down traffic and improve air quality by encouraging people to use mass transit instead. It's also expected to raise $15 billion for infrastructure projects at the MTA. Governor Kathy Hochul, who paused the plan that had been slated to go into effect in June, pointed to the lower toll as a cost savings for commuters. Chair Drano Lieber says the MTA will resume construction on the 2nd Avenue subway line and multiple elevator projects aimed at making stations more accessible.
This is a hopeful moment because it shows that New Yorkers, we collectively can take on and address big challenges that we're facing. And it's a hopeful moment. I know that folks don't want to hear this always. It's even a hopeful moment for drivers because life can and should get a lot better if you have to drive to New York, if you elect to drive to New York, if you're not spending as much time in congestion.
But not everyone feels that way. Congestion pricing still faces a lot of opposition in the outer boroughs and suburbs. There are at least 8 active lawsuits in New York and New Jersey looking to block the toll before it goes into effect on January 5th. Hugh Lawrence of Wappingers Falls has been working as a surgeon in New York City for 15 years. He usually catches the Metro North train at Beacon Station, but he worries how congestion pricing might impact other healthcare workers.
I hate it. it's just another expense, just another tax, for working people who have to go down in that area.
Congressman Mike Lawler, a Republican from the 17th District in Rockland County, quickly launched an ad campaign urging residents to sign a petition at his new website titled simply congestionpricingsucks.com.
I've been fighting to kill congestion pricing for years because it's nothing more than a scam. It's a cash grab. The
MTA. Rockland County Executive Ed Day calls congestion pricing an illegal tax by the MTA. He plans to continue a lawsuit alleging the MTA doesn't have the authority to levy it.
You are penalizing people in Rockland, for example, or west of the Hudson, who have no alternate way of getting to work with public transportation. Many of those people are cops, firefighters, teachers, nurses. They will be stuck here. They cannot go back home because there's no transportation unless they take the car down, which is ridiculous.
No one likes to pay for things that used to be free, but that's not what most of the lawsuits are saying. Christine Billy, a clinical law professor at NYU, says most of the cases deal with environmental concerns. They claim congestion pricing will increase traffic and pollution in the suburbs, and that the MTA didn't study this well enough in its environmental assessment. Some of these claims have been dismissed by a New York judge, but the plaintiffs aren't giving up. Looking forward, Billy says it's likely plaintiffs will seek a preliminary injunction to further delay the toll.
Which basically says to the court, our claims are so serious, they're so important, that you need to put a restraint on moving forward with this program until all of the claims have been fully heard and adjudicated.
How might delays help opponents? Well, the most obvious answer now is that there will be a new administration come January 20th. The new toll still needs approval from the Federal Highway Administration, and President-elect Trump has been clear about his dislike for congestion pricing. Billy says it's too soon to tell how Trump might act if the Biden administration approves the toll first, but that hasn't stopped suburban lawmakers from asking Trump to step in. The same day the MTA approved its new plan, Hempstead Town Supervisor Don Claven held his own press conference on Long Island.
We're going to do everything we can to stop this. And when the new administration comes in, we're going to do everything we can to get them to help us so you can just live your life out here, go to work, and not be hassled by the MTA and the governor anymore.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Jesse King.
Listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. This week, I sat down with Democratic New York State Senator Liz Krueger, who is a proponent, supports the new and revised congestion pricing plan. She argues with many who are against it, including many top Republicans in the state who say it's a tax that, in fact, it is not.
Well, it's not another tax, because you don't have to pay it if you choose not to drive into Manhattan below 60th Street. And there are alternatives. It's called public transportation, which is what we're trying to save and expand. So it is not a tax. There is no basis for it to be a tax because you don't have to pay it. And I represent half of the zone, and it's the most congested area of, I think, the world at this point. This is the most congested city, I believe, in the country. And the congestion is not only increasing health problems for the people who live and work here, it is also slowing down everything to such ridiculously slow miles per hour that the business community has evaluated it costs them billions of dollars a year with people sitting in traffic in Manhattan. And that if they didn't have to sit in this traffic, that there would be far more productivity, far more revenue for businesses, and the business community is in support of congestion pricing. The New York Partnership, the real estate community, they're all on record in support of this. And frankly, no one, I think, is denying we need a strong 21st century mass transit system, because otherwise New York City won't continue to be the economic breadbasket, not just for people who live down here, but for the entire state of New York. We are the revenue generators that send our tax revenue upstate New York to the counties that don't have as strong an economy. And if we don't have a functioning city that people can come in and go to work, have a mass transit system in and out of the city and other states in the region who also all come to New York City for work, then we've sort of killed the golden goose that's producing the golden eggs. And even the example of MTA and congestion pricing, I have heard from a number of my upstate Republican colleagues how important it is that we move forward with congestion pricing, because without it, the MTA had canceled or delayed its contracts to expand its, modernize its rolling stock of buses and subway cars that are built in upstate New York communities. And those companies were talking about laying off hundreds and hundreds of people in upstate communities. So, you know, just because somebody uses a word doesn't make it true.
Well, I wonder, with the current national political situation, obviously with the Republicans now fully in control, you know, President-elect Donald Trump, a former New Yorker and someone who likes to get back at people. He's been quoted many times talking about revenge. And I wonder if you're worried at all. Like, for example, right now we're seeing this Trump criminal case being delayed. It looks like the prosecutors don't want to tuck it under the rug or get rid of it. But how much are you worried that the president of the United States, when he takes office, will look to hurt New York?
Well, isn't it amazing that you can actually say that, and the possibility is it's true, that this country actually elected someone to be president who's not only been found guilty already of, I think, 34 felony charges with more cases in process, but a president of the United States who's going to take an oath of office to uphold the Constitution on January 20th, who says, I am going to punish people who didn't politically agree with me. Like, if we heard that coming from any other country, we would be beyond up in arms about this. But this is what we're facing. So, yes, I think it's quite possible that he will try to take retribution on anybody he defines as his enemy. He ran someone against me for Senate because I didn't like mixed martial arts, and he owned a mixed martial arts company before he even thought about running for president, just for the record. So I'm probably on the enemy list. But my job as an elected official is to stand up for the people of New York State, to take my oath of office seriously, to uphold our Constitution and our laws, and to do what I believe is in the best interest of the people of our state, even if I'm being threatened. So I guess I can't stop him from threatening, I guess I can't stop him from going after me or other people who think like me, but that's not my job. My job is to do what I have to do to stand up for New York, our people, our state, our Constitution, and our laws.
Yeah, Liz Krueger. It could get ugly, right? Especially around immigration, if you start having federal immigration authorities raiding places in New York.
Yes, it could be extremely scary. And remember, he said he was going to do it last time, so he already significantly influenced people's behavior last time. And I think he is far more serious about prioritizing this now. I certainly hope that the community of people who supported him or didn't support him, but know that mass deportations of non-citizens will have an enormously damaging impact on the economy of every state in this country, that they will rise up and tell him, you know, it was a nice PR line, but it's a really bad idea. I've already watched on national news shows people representing farmers talking about the devastating impact on U.S. farm production if there are no workers on their farms, and that there will be no one to pick the crops or do any of the work on farms that needs to be done, disproportionately in other parts of the food industry as well, disproportionately impact on communities that hire migrants as day laborers, which is all over the state of New York, as home care workers, as child care workers in their homes. I mean, these are people that we have been hiring to live in our homes and take care of us. And now they're going to be thrown out of this country. Migrants and other people without legal status or complete legal status, because there's always all these people in a gray area who are working, are paying taxes, even though they'll never get benefits in return. Are some not law-abiding? Yes, some of us aren't law-abiding, but the vast majority are law-abiding people who came here for a better life, just the way my four grandparents came here to escape anti-Semitism and pogroms in Eastern Europe.
That's Democratic New York State Senator Liz Krueger. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. A Capital Region cidery is celebrating a new statewide law allowing direct shipping of more alcohol products to customers. The Legislative Gazette's Alexander Babby with more.
Putting in this one, right?
You got it. Place it in.
Okay. So
the new law, which went into effect over the weekend, was proposed by Democratic State Assemblywoman Pat Fahey of the 109th District and signed by Governor Kathy Hochul in August. It allows craft manufacturers of spirits, hard cider, and mead to ship directly to consumers after they had temporarily been allowed to do so during the pandemic. Speaking at Nine Pin Cider Monday, State Senator-elect Fahey says the change supports both beverage makers and the farmers behind the drinks.
This has become a multi-billion dollar industry, yet they could not ship anywhere. So if you were in a rural county and were visiting a cidery or a distillery, you could not call back to order another bottle of the cranberry cider for the holidays.
Nine Pin became New York's first farm cidery in 2014. Now there are 125 throughout the state. Packing one of the first orders, Fahey says the law was 7 years in the making.
The alcohol beverage control laws are about over 100 years old. So any changes on those laws, it takes a lot of work. There's a lot of different interests. And on this one, there was a lot of opposition. Some of it was opposition to alcohol. Some of it was, you know, any form of alcohol.
Fahey adds under the new law, New Yorkers can ship across the U.S. to states that also allow alcohol shipment by mail. Sonia Del Peral is co-founder of Ninepin and its general manager. She says Ninepin prides itself on its sourcing.
One of our partners in the business is Samascot Orchards. They have a very large orchard, over 1,000 acres, and we get the majority of our apples from them. But we also source apples and other fruits, pears, quince, raspberries, strawberries, cranberries from all over New York State.
Ninepin is also known for the large rose, painted on the side of its building on Broadway, done by Sonia's husband, Cassiano Del Peral. He says the way his son Alejandro makes cider at Ninepin is the same as in his native Spain. Cassiano says, quote, "It's a drink you make in the fall when you harvest the apples. You make it into cider and let it sit and ferment a few days. When that's done, you can drink it. It's excellent. And the way Alejandro does it is the same way it would be done in Spain. The only thing different is here there are more apples," end quote.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Alexander Babby.
The American Lung Association's new 2024 State of Lung Cancer Report ranks New York in the top five states for early diagnosis, surgery, and survival. The Legislative Gazette's Dave Lucas with a deeper look.
The American Lung Association says the national lung cancer survival rate has risen 26% in the last 5 years due to increased awareness and advancements in detection and treatment. Mike Sealback, National Assistant Vice President for State Policy for the American Lung Association, says the rate of new lung cancer cases in New York is 53.9 per 100,000, in line with the national rate of 53.6. He notes the survival rate of people alive 5 years after being diagnosed in the state is 33.9, besting the national rate of 28.4%. In New York, 32.1% of cases are caught at an early stage, also several points above the national rate of 27.4%.
We really saw very good data when it comes to early diagnosis, surgery for lung cancer, and the five-year survival rate. New York ranks among the best for each of those categories. So what we're seeing is that a higher percentage of cases are diagnosed early.
And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a
went surgery in many cases, and that they are surviving longer than compared to many other states.
Massachusetts had the top survival rate, 37.9%, as well as the best rate of early diagnosis, 34.7%. Dr. David Hill is a pulmonologist in Waterbury, Connecticut, who chairs the American Lung Association National Board. Hill says early diagnosis is key. Last year, while 16% of those eligible nationwide were screened for lung cancer, Hill says New Yorkers were screened at a rate of 19.3%.
So if we start from the beginning, lung cancer screening, we know that annual low-dose CT scans for patients at high risk really can reduce lung cancer death. And even though New York was number 11 in the country, the screening rate for those eligible was under 20%. So there are a lot of lives that can be saved. Fortunately, New York has a really robust healthcare system it's supported strongly at the state level, so that leads to some of those better outcomes. And it's a sign if we fund the healthcare system well, people do better. So we're really urging both the states and Congress to take action, particularly calling on Congress to pass the Increasing Access to Lung Cancer Screening Act.
Hill says much progress has been made in treating lung cancer thanks to biomarker testing that monitors changes in a tumor's DNA. The testing is being employed to customize treatments for individual patients.
So there are targeted therapies, typically what are called monoclonal antibodies. There's also a treatment called immunotherapy, which uses the body's own immune system to fight cancers. And it's really important that insurance cover the biomarker testing itself. It can be expensive, and it can be a cost barrier to people who have cancer if they don't have appropriate coverage. New York, in general, does cover comprehensive biomarker testing, which is good. Not every state does that. You know, and one of the challenges for patients with lung cancer is healthcare in the United States is very expensive. So screening is often covered, but patients can have a substantial financial barrier to getting appropriate treatment once they are diagnosed.
Seelbeck says there are 11 unique biomarkers that can dictate the course of treatment.
We always encourage anyone facing a lung cancer diagnosis to ask their doctors about biomarker testing, and New York is one of about 25 states that insurance covers biomarker testing. So that's really important, and we want to see that coverage expand across the country. We also want to make sure that legislators in Albany basically pass legislation so that lung cancer screening and its follow-up is all covered by insurance the same way that colorectal, breast, and cervical cancer are treated in New York.
The ALA recommends lung cancer screenings for former smokers and other high-risk people between the ages of 55 and 80.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Lucas.
And that about does it for this week's show. The Legislative Gazette is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. We had help from the New York Public News Network. You can listen anytime at WAMCpodcast.org or anywhere you get your podcasts. Look for program number 2447. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina. Support for the Legislative Gazette comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.